This is episode 7, Trash Talking with Eco Warriors.
Launching the first flight foot market was just the most badass feeling I had ever had. I feel like that was the moment that I realized this was a need in the market that we had identified, and we were really helping people.
That's Sarah Spoviero, Columbia graduate and co-founder of the Lightfoot Market. This past year, Sarah launched the marketplace to help consumers connect with brands that care about the environment, the suppliers, and the people who purchase their products. Their first pop-up was held in Dumbo this past spring, where over 1,000 eco-conscious consumers came to shop sustainable products from over 55 different local brands. You're listening to Trash Talking with Eco Warriors. I'm your host and founder of Trashy Beauty, Barbara Lee. This weekend, on December 9th and 10th, 70 sustainable brands, including Trashy Beauty, will gather together for the Lightfoot Market. This holiday pop-up that will take place at the Metropolitan Suite in Chelsea, New York City, is for market goers to have access to locally made gifts from teas to beauty products, all specially curated for the conscious consumer. We will be there, and we hope to see you there as well. If you mention the podcast, you will get a free small gift from us, and come and try out the Trashy Beauty repurposed coffee scrub. You won't be disappointed. It's the best thing to happen to your skin in the winter since coconut oil. I loved talking to Sarah because she has had this formal education in sustainability and really went for creating something she thought would better the world. Stay tuned to the end when Sarah and I geek out over her party trick and both of our favorite books. Now, let's get trash talking.
You're tuning in to Trash Talking with Eco Warriors, where women share inspiring stories about their careers in green business, sustainability, and conservation. Here's your host and founder of Trashy Beauty, Barbara Lee.
Awesome. Sarah, can you tell us a little bit about you?
I'm Sarah. I'm the founder of Lightfoot Market, and we are a sustainable commerce platform for shoppers who want to do better and find an easy way to shop responsibly, and for businesses who really value environmental and social sustainability. But I grew up in Connecticut, and I'm based here in New York City now and have been loving it.
And how did this whole thing start? How did you come to be the founder of the Lightfoot Market?
Well, it kind of started in two different places. I am a conscious consumer, and as a conscious consumer, I really know how difficult it can be to have to go through that resource-intensive process of reading every tag and reading every label. My network is really deep into this community of sustainability and environmentalism, and most people in my community still had a lot of trouble making those kinds of conscious decisions that benefit the environment and communities. People who are very well educated and really dedicated to, you know, tackling climate change and things like this still really struggle. So the fact that this is a problem for everybody was a really big red flag. My co-founder, he has a sustainable business. It's called The Bower Studio. It's based in Pelham, Massachusetts. Part of his business is going to different marketplaces and showing his products there and making sales that way. So as a sustainable vendor, he sells these beautiful seed cards that are illustrated and they can be planted afterwards. He was a little frustrated by the lack of sustainable-based marketplaces. So he was kind of competing in a marketplace that didn't value his values or didn't have that in common with him. So he could be selling his very ethically and sustainably made product next to, you know, Joe Schmo over there who didn't care about that at all. And he felt like just kind of contributing to consumerism for the sake of consumerism in that way was not really what was important to him. There was definitely an identification of these vendors and businesses who really had those values, those sustainable values, and on my end, the consumers that needed a platform to reach them. So Lightfoot was born out of that, kind of that need to connect the two.
Okay, cool. And what is Lightfoot Market?
First and foremost, we always say we're a platform and a hub that connects conscious consumers and sustainable businesses. But in its most direct form, We are a pop-up market in New York City. We had our inaugural event this past April 30th, and it was a huge success. I'm still glowing from it. It was just such an inspiring day of people telling us exactly that we were solving that problem that I had really felt frustrated with, and from the vendor perspective, being so grateful to be directly connected, face-to-face with their conscious consumers, and not having to do that whole pitch about why you should be sustainable and why, they invested in those kinds of choices when they were making decisions about production and about sourcing of materials. They didn't have to kind of defend themselves there, because the conscious consumers at this marketplace really played to that. So that was just a great day. And our next event is December 9th and 10th. It's a holiday gift pop-up, and that's going to be in Chelsea.
Amazing. How did you get started in environmentalism, and why is sustainability so important to you?
I guess if I'm thinking way back, my first foray in the environmental realm, it was kind of unexpected. I started out as a fine arts major in undergrad. This was my freshman year, and I thought that was what I was going to be doing. I even went as far as to study abroad in Italy. I did a semester in Rome, and I did that, to further my ambition as an artist and be inspired by the greats. And that happened. I went abroad, but when I was abroad, I kind of realized that I was concentrating more on these little intricacies of the environment, more so than art even. So there are these birds, the European starlings, the euthornia in Italian. They migrate through Rome at the time of year that I was there, and they swarm in these crazy patterns, like an environmental hazard with them. And so I just ended up being fascinated on that end, realizing how many apartments didn't have washers and dryers, or had washers but then not dryers because they're so energy intensive. I just started focusing on those things. And, that semester that I thought I was going to come home and be like, I am an inspired artist, I actually came home and transferred schools and applied for an environmental studies program. So that's where it kind of started.
But where did you get your inspiration from, your love of the environment and nature to begin with?
I think I was lucky enough to grow up in an environment that had some nature. In Connecticut, I was in more of a rural town. And my parents' property has, it's just got a nice backyard. And that is still nature to me. Just so resilient. Think about all of these animals and plants that are existing so close to humans. And that is inspiring in and of itself. But we also were adjacent. We abutted this natural land trust property. It was probably 10 acres of land. And I think just having the ability to go back there and use that as kind of a sanctuary space, even when I was really little and not thinking of it as a sanctuary space, I was thinking of it as Narnia. I could go back there and, these beautiful enchanted woods were so majestic and beautiful, and I could, be a wood nymph if I wanted to. So I think that was really, it was young that I just really appreciated having that kind of nature near me and using that as inspiration.
And with the Lightfoot Market, other than doing a couple pop-up markets, what's your bigger vision and goal for it?
We want to be an online commerce platform as soon as possible. And right now we also want to continue doing our pop-up markets. We think that it's so valuable to build that community. And that was a huge byproduct of having these pop-up markets, and I feel like we do understand our consumers better. We understand the needs of the businesses that partner with us a lot more. But in the next year, or maybe even sooner than that, we do hope to launch an ability for shoppers to shop online consciously and not just at our pop-up market.
And what has been some of the challenges that you faced along the way? Just being a small business owner and getting a business off the ground in New York City, I'm sure it's a challenge in and of itself.
Yeah, there are definitely challenges. And I think that some of the obvious ones are, where do we get funding? But I think just underlying all of these issues is, we're a team of five. I'm doing this full time. And sometimes I don't know the answer to something. And you know, being at the top of the ladder, it means I have to learn it. That's just been, it's been amazing, but it's also definitely a challenge coming across little things like how to budget. You know, I didn't learn this in school, so I'm learning it now, and I'm learning it in a really practical and amazing way. There's definitely a learning curve with starting a business, no matter how well prepared you think you are. Just in general, being an entrepreneur, there's no matter what, no matter how prepared you think you are, there's always going to be a pretty major learning curve. But I really don't think that that's a deterrent. I think that it's just really exciting and engaging constantly to be like teaching yourself new things and new skills out of necessity for something that you really care about. Sometimes there just isn't somebody who knows the answer, so you have to be that person, find the answer.
And do you have any mentors or people that like you rely on or look up to?
I definitely have some people in the industry that I just really admire. I think that Paul Hawken is a really great inspiration. I mean, I've never met him, so he's not a mentor, but in terms of somebody I look up to and, you know, read their literature and think that they set a really good model of what's important. Paul Hawken is great. He wrote The Ecology of Commerce, and he recently, I think, wrote a new book. It's called Drawdown, but I haven't read that yet. He's an environmentalist, an entrepreneur, he's an author, and Elon Musk. I think, you know, he's the founder of Tesla. I think people who have not been afraid to take risks to find solutions to problems, not been afraid of failure, I think that that is kind of an epidemic, that fear of failing at something, so not trying. And I think that people like Elon Musk and Paul Hawken kind of embody what it means to just go for it. And failure is, you know, you can reframe that to learn so much from that. So
awesome. And do you feel like what you studied in school, do you feel like that actually prepared you for what you're doing now?
I don't know if anything could have fully prepared me for the workload that is doing a startup. But yes, I got my master's in sustainability management at Columbia. I recently graduated this past May, and I definitely made sure to take classes that I felt would connect me with people who, if I did start a project, you know, Lightfoot was just a thought at the time, you know, that I would have some kind of mentorship there and have a community. I think that just being around so many inspiring professionals in the sustainability world made me feel like I had the grounds, the knowledge base to start something on my own. So I think especially, I think that inspiration was really important. And I don't know if I would have had the confidence even to say, yes, I'm the woman for this job. I can make this better than anybody can make this.
And what keeps you inspired on a day-to-day basis? What motivates you to keep going and to, like, inspire change?
Yeah, I think sometimes we've had a pretty weird summer, and we've had a pretty weird spring, and we had a pretty weird winter. And sometimes I think going outside, and it's, like, July, but it's kind of cold, or we're having, you know, these crazy climactic events all over the world. I think, honestly, the weather and climate has just been, like, a constant reminder that things are not looking good for us, and we are going to have to make some changes. So somebody has to make that easier, or the people who are paralyzed by the magnitude of this problem. I mean, it's not something that any one person can solve. So that's kind of a recipe for people feeling like they can't help, especially people who aren't dedicated to this field. Just making something that's accessible and something that's approachable for everybody, for sure. So the answer to your question is the weather.
And can you give someone who wants to live a more sustainable life 3 tips of how to do so?
Say the first and most important tip is to not take it too seriously. I think that when we think that we have to be perfect at this, we kind of psych ourselves out a little bit too easily. And that goes for me. That goes for everybody in this community that I know. You really kind of need to take it one step at a time and do as much as you can do, or do one new thing. And that's okay too, because progress is always going to be better than nothing. Put that into perspective and don't be overwhelmed by the amount of different things you can do, and maybe just choose one. Get on board with reusable bags and reusable thermoses and things like that. Plastic waste is a huge problem. Just remembering to bring a reusable bag and just keeping them in your purse or keep them in your backpack, keep them in your pocket. People are making some really cool innovations that make it really easy for you to just have a reusable bag wherever you go. And then a really easy one is that hashtag Stop Sucking movement, which is all about, declining plastic straws. Plastic straws are such a waste. It's really kind of tragic that has become such a focus. You know, when you're at a bar and you can catch the bartender, say, I don't need the straws, those little annoying straws that you can't even really get enough liquid out of. Don't even use them. Just say no thanks.
Cool. Awesome. And where have you kind of like learned about these different issues?
So the issues that I've been tackling with Lightfoot Market are really just issues that everybody faces. You don't necessarily have to be in this realm to identify that there's a problem with consumerism, and that we have products in the market that aren't safe for our health, not safe for the environment, and they really degrade communities, and they're problematic. I think that everybody can see the damage, you know, when there are sweatshops without safe regulations. So I think that was always something that was very visual and known to me. But in terms of finding a solution for that, I'm not really sure. I think that little by little, with just interest, I started looking into it more and more. And I don't think all of that information came at once from any one source. So it's kind of just really curiosity.
But what was do you have like a moment that you realized that like this is something that like is a problem and that you wanted to do something about it?
Yeah, I guess the call was my own life, that I was really frustrated. I, somebody who really has committed myself, you know, all of my education, sustainability issues, I was struggling to shop consciously. I was struggling to find brands that were something that I would be comfortable bringing to my house and really knowing and being sure about it. That's kind of a huge red flag. So I just started realizing that if I couldn't do it easily, think of all the people who are not even going to try to do it.
What are some of your favorite brands that you've come across, or maybe like companies that you've worked with that you're like, this is it, like this company is doing it?
So hard. It's like picking a favorite child. You're asking me impossible. But I can tell you right now, I'm wearing Rothy's, which are ballet flat style, like yoga comfortable shoes. They look like a professional flat, but they feel like sneakers when you're wearing them. They're amazing. And they're 3D printed using waste from plastic water bottles. So they're super innovative. They are absolutely amazing. They're an investment, and the best investment I've made. I wear them all the time. They're machine washable. They're 3D printed. That's a zero waste process. They don't have to like cut the extra fabric off and throw it in the garbage. There's no extra fabric. It's printed to the exact amount of material it needs. Extra comfortable because there are no seams. So there's no part that, like, rubs or pinches. I'm sorry. I'm not even a Rothy's spokesperson. I just happen to be wearing them, and I love them. A Keith candle lit, and Keith is one of our was one of our vendors from our April market. I know that brand personally, and I know how dedicated they are to finding solutions, to finding the sustainable wax. I have my Dopper water bottle here that I'm drinking from, and they're an awesome company, not just because we make these reusable water bottles with like good materials. They also are a really big community player, and they're really dedicated to removing plastic waste from oceans in the world. They're more than just a water bottle company.
Great, because I think one of the biggest issues is trying to figure out, like, even if you typed in the right keywords into Google and 10 companies pop up, I think the saturation of greenwashing in the market, and also the uncertainty of what people are marketing towards a consumer, is part of the issue.
Absolutely. And you have to kind of take the time to build that confidence, or you can just shop at Lightfoot Market. I feel like I've done that with these vendors for 100% sure. So there is that feeling of, like, you know, breathing easy. Like, I really feel like I've I've done my due diligence on these, and I want to give that knowledge to whoever else wants it.
Sure, absolutely. You know, it's so interesting because I used to work as a content creator for a company that curated fair trade products from around the world as a means of helping people find these really beautiful fair trade products and helping the people who make the products. And I just found that there was such a discrepancy sometimes between certain brands that there would be some who were quintessentially doing everything that I wanted a brand to do. And then there were others that kind of just said that they were, but when you talk to them, it didn't feel authentic.
Yeah, it's a big problem. I think people are learning the right things to say and just kind of saying what they know they want people to hear, really kind of ruining the industry. It's making it 10 times harder for us, I just have to say. It's called greenwashing, by the way. Yeah, the way that we sort through our vendors, we're a small team right now, so a lot of our building blocks are dependent on company reporting, which is problematic. But there are some certifications like Fair Trade, the ones that are harder for us as a small team to really vet. There are other organizations who are already doing that. So as a requirement for our product side as a Fair Trade certified company, or they need to be registered on other websites that have those missions already and have already done the vetting, so we're not like reinventing the wheel, like the Fair Trade Federation, the World Fair Trade Organization. They have present and up-to-date member lists of fair trade businesses that they trust. And, you know, so all we really need to do is trust their vetting process, which we do. And we use that as a big resource to help us go through and decide which ones are making it up and which ones are really living by it. Something that we do that's an advantage of being, you know, a smaller-based community right now is we're really able to talk to all of our partners and businesses. Like you were able to tell that there was something a little insincere about their sustainability story. We do the same. We have like deep conversations with most of our vendors, especially the ones that we're not really sure. Their products are coming from so many different places. One thing when you know that all of your products were handmade in Brooklyn and a business that does fair trade or has businesses from many other producers around the world. So we do make sure to talk to those people and hear their story, hear how they, you know, prioritize their sourcing. At the end of the day, it still has to come down to what people are telling us and that there's always going to be a flaw in that. But we're doing as much due diligence as I believe is possible at this stage.
Yeah, no, for sure. It's just one of those tricky questions, you know, because people could technically tell you anything they want as far as marketing goes. And I think it's unfortunate that the green businesses and the social businesses are the ones that come under more scrutiny than bigger businesses, purely for the reason that the people who are shopping those businesses are the people who are more consciously aware.
And it's really a big problem. I totally see that. And we'll have to work together and try and kind of shed some light on practices together as like a community, because you're right, people can kind of say whatever they want to say. You have to somewhat trust these organizations that are dedicated to finding the right people, but at the end of the day, it's just still a problem. But we'll work towards finding a solution. I'm optimistic.
Good, yeah. What is so important to you about the work that you're doing?
I think that voting with your dollars is really empowering. And I think especially now, I feel a little disempowered in the public sector. And I think we sometimes discount the private sector as a way that we can really use our voices with every single purchase. You know, every single time you buy something, you're voting for it to be in the marketplace and you're endorsing it. So by being more careful about what you endorse, you really are using your voice to tell the marketplace what you want there. If you are tired of having to sift through chemicals and not really understand which ones are toxic, then purchase the products that you know do not have any toxic ingredients in them. Purchase something that's better, and that will tell the market that it needs to evolve and shape to our needs, as opposed to the needs of these big companies that really don't have a heart at its core. and don't care about the livelihoods of your families, and they don't care about you, and they don't care about the environment, they're, you know, a big cog in the wheel. So I think that we just need to be really more picky choosy about what we're purchasing and really thinking of it as more of an empowerment tool. And that's really powerful for me, and that's what drives me.
What is something that you think, wondering what you think people should do to figure out, like, you know, this stuff on a day-to-day basis? Like, who should they be supporting? Like, which are the brands that they should be purchasing?
I could list brands for days, but in terms of trying to help people get the tools to be conscious consumers on their own, it's definitely tricky, but you just need to read every tag, read every label. When you pick up a box of crackers, look at the ingredients and try to decide if that's something that you want to endorse. If you agree that those ingredients are healthy for families and communities, then that's great. But if you don't, I recommend that you don't purchase it. I would ask a lot of questions and feel more comfortable asking questions, going into shops and saying, like, hey, well, do you know what is this fabric? Where was it made? Do you know where your garments are made? I think it's kind of taboo, definitely uncomfortable, kind of challenge people that way, especially, you know, when you're face to face. I think that can be tricky, but it's something that I've had to start doing. And since then, I've realized it's pretty easy to tell who cares and who does not. So blown away by the amount of vendors who know their sourcing, like the back of their hand. And that is what their business was built on. And that's kind of how businesses should be. They should care about the components that make their product, because that's what we're consuming. I think that if you feel comfortable kind of asking more questions, I've gotten so much insight from vendors and just...
For sure. And do you have something that you've done really crazy, like in the name of environmentalism?
This is kind of weird, but for 5 summers, it was my summer job. I was a teacher at the Audubon Society, and I was teaching young children about environmental conservation, and it was the best job ever, because you're basically like hiking and telling kids how awesome nature is, but, you know, it's really ecology and sustainability and helping to create little future stewards. But something that I loved doing was reading Dr. Seuss's The Lorax. And so I don't know if this counts as in the name of sustainability. I don't think this really is helping anybody too much. But I accidentally memorized The Lorax, and now I may or may not, you know, break that out at a couple parties for a couple drinks. And so I feel like I'm spreading the words of The Lorax in the name of sustainability. It's not that cool, but yeah, that's the answer I'm going with.
I love
that's
it.
The first thing that came to my head.
I love it. No, it's great. I think it's definitely one of those books that, like, when people say they haven't read it, I was just like, you're not an environmentalist. Like, you,
yeah,
as
you,
a small child, didn't. Well, I have a couple of people that I've mentioned to them. I was like, yeah, I read The Lorax as a kid and watched Ferngully, and those movies just spoke to me. And
yeah, Pocahontas,
like,
absolutely.
Yeah, and they're like, what is The Lorax? And I was like, oh, man. Like,
No.
You probably work in banking, because...
You don't get out of childhood with The Lorax and then not care about the trees.
Right, exactly. Do you have any other books or movies or podcasts or anything that you would recommend?
I mentioned this earlier, but I really think Ecology of Commerce by Paul Hawken is really great. I think that sometimes following influencers and blogs that have really good ideas, like EcoCult, Alden Wicker writes, is, you know, the editor for that, and it's just a blog online, but it has so many great resources. She has her favorite non-toxic nail salons in New York City. It's mostly New York City based, but I love, like, cruising through that. So influencers like that have helped to inspire me, and like, it's a nice thing to follow and stay energized.
Wow, cool. Do you have any other people that you like really admire? Any other brands or blogs that you recommend?
The brands question. I'm sorry, I keep going back to this, but there's so many of them. I almost just want to say, look on our website, United by Blue. They're based in Pennsylvania, but they have a store in Soho, New York City. And they have some awesome missions and some great products, and they do cleanups. So So for every product purchased, they sell like outdoor gears. For every product that's sold, they do a cleanup in, you know, in the local area, and they have a mission of removing plastic from waterways.
Cool. Awesome. Do you have like an inspiring nature moment that's helped motivate and propel you forward?
I know that my most inspiring nature moments were definitely when I was a kid and still had that wonderment of how weird and crazy nature is. I have memories of just being like stomach down in the grass, my face like inches away from dirt, and just kind of looking really intentionally at all of the systems in the soil and looking at ants, but really close up, and just feeling so much wonderment and being like, what is this? This is crazy. And I think holding on to that feeling of magic and wonder has been a really big inspiration for me, and just helps keep me really grounded and like what the simplicity of this is and why it's so important that kids are able to like play outside.
Well, thanks so much for your time, Sarah.
Of course. That was awesome.
Thank you for listening to inspiring interviews with female eco-warriors from around the world. If you're enjoying the podcast, please remember to subscribe, rate, and review Trash Talking with Eco-Warriors on iTunes or wherever you tune in. We are up to 150 downloads per episode, have over 19 five-star ratings, and 7 positive reviews. We read everything you post and would love to hear what you love about the show, anyone else that you'd like to see featured, or any topics you want us to share. That's it for today, Eco Warriors. Come and see us at the Lightfoot Market this weekend on December 9th and 10th, and tune in again next week. Stay green.
Thanks for talking dirty with us. Tune in next week for more Trash Talking with Eco Warriors. For more inspiration, follow us on Instagram @trashybeautyco.